part of the Roundtable series. The Interpreter Foundation presents this broadcast, and it's one of a number of LDS Gospel Doctrine class roundtables. If you would like more information or like to see other ones, go to MormonInterpreter.com. Today's lesson is Lesson 41, Every Member a Missionary. Before we go straight to that, I'd like to mention a little bit more about the Interpreter Foundation so those who are not too familiar with it might know a little bit more. The purpose of Interpreter Foundation is to support the Latter-day Saint restoration of the gospel as taught by Joseph Smith and other prophets, to provide information to church members and others who are interested in hearing about the gospel message, and to defend the church against critics. And for the second purpose here, to provide information, we are here at this roundtable today. Missionary work has been part of the gospel ever since Jesus Christ ascended into heaven. In Matthew chapter 28, verse 19, his last admonition to the apostles was, go preach the gospel to every creature. And the apostles took that very seriously. In our dispensation, Joseph Smith made it very clear that we have the same admonition now. And as a matter of fact, perhaps even more so. There have been a number of LDS scriptures that talk about the importance of missionary work, talking about the field is white, all ready to harvest. That occurs so many places in the Doctrine and Covenants that it's hard to list them all. We also have this admonition in Doctrine and Covenants section 88, verse 81, to members that once you hear the good news, there is an obligation to inform your neighbors about that good news, which fits right in with our theme today, every member a missionary. And so if you take that seriously, as a teacher or as a class student, you will want to go out and preach the gospel to others. Missionary work has been really important in the church from its beginning. The first missionaries preached the gospel on formal missionary experiences almost immediately after it was formed. Interestingly enough, the year that Joseph Smith was killed in Carthage in 1844, there were 586 missionaries called that year. Some, of course, before and few after. That shows the great impetus on missionary work that was going on in the early church. In the early days of the church, Latter-day Saint missionaries went into many different countries. Before the death of Joseph Smith, missionaries were called to Australia, India, South America, Germany, and Jamaica. And Orson Hyde and George J. Adams were even called to Russia, although they did not fulfill their mission for other reasons. Orson Hyde went on a mission to Palestine, where he dedicated the location for the second coming and for the restoration of the gospel and the gathering of the Jews. It was a fascinating effort. There have been missionaries that went to the Society Islands in the Pacific Ocean in 1843. It's an amazing history of missionary work that we have in our church, and one of the biggest things that is emphasized is that ordinary members of the church, those without a special missionary calling to be full-time missionaries, are called to be member missionaries during their daily lives. So with that brief introduction to our topic today, we'll turn our time over to Craig Foster, who's in the center of your screen, and then after that to Cassandra Hedelius, who is at the left of your screen, to make a couple of points. Craig?
Thank you. As you mentioned, the church has a history of missionary work. And the missionary work had its high points and its low points, I guess you could say, during the 19th century and even the early 20th century, because of anti-Mormonism and anti-Mormon propaganda, etc. But beginning during the administration of Heber J. Grant, on into the time of George Albert Smith, and particularly in the administration of David O. McKay, the missionaries began to have a bit more success in terms of reaching out to people, and they were, in general, better accepted than they had been previous to that, mostly because the image of the Latter-day Saints was getting better, at least in the minds of most of the American populace. Now, David O. McKay was the one that said every member a missionary, and his administration really pushed that missionary work wasn't just for those who were specifically called and assigned to go to various places around the world. Missionary work was for everyone within the church and for everyone on a personal level to seek out family, friends, neighbors, those that they worked with, etc. And that really helped with the growth of the church. Spencer W. Kimball, of course, is best known for his little phrase of do it and do it now, and we must lengthen our stride. And so, again, he really pushed missionary work. And then I wanted to mention specifically that under President Kimball's administration, of course, we had the announcement about priesthood to all worthy males in 1978 on the 8th of June, if I remember correctly. And this was really significant in terms of church growth. Now, it was significant for a number of factors, and I don't think we need to go into all of those right now. But just focusing on missionary work, the announcement from the church on the priesthood to all worthy males, just really the missionary work blossomed in certain parts of the world. President Kimball had been very concerned about Latter-day Saints down in Brazil who were giving everything they had in terms of money and time and effort for the building of the temple in São Paulo. He was concerned about that because I'm sure a number of people know, but maybe not everyone realize that it's a very mixed population down in Brazil. And so a good portion of the population had, to one degree or another, blood from African blood because of all of the originally the slaves that were brought from Africa to Brazil and then later other Africans who immigrated to Brazil. And that revelation really helped ease that potential problem. And what it did was it encouraged even more growth in Brazil, but especially in Africa. It was incredible. Overnight, the missionary work just blossomed, and there are all kinds of Africans were brought into the church, baptized as members of the church, and the growth was incredible. And so I look at that what a wonderful, wonderful thing to happen. And it also, there was an influence in Europe because of a number of Africans who had immigrated to Europe over time, and a church membership of those of African descent living in the various European countries was also influenced by that revelation on priesthood. So that's kind of an overview of missionary work, and obviously we come right up to this day where with the announcement just a little over a year ago about the New Ages for Ages announcement, whatever, for missionary work, the missionary force has just grown, I think, more than what even the greatest hopes were of the missionary department and of the brethren. So it's been incredible. And I'll turn the time over to Cassandra.
Oh, okay. Hi. So if you are looking at the outline in the Gospel Doctrine Manual for this lesson, one of the points that it talks about is how the church, the Doctrine and Covenants prophesied that the church would come forth out of obscurity. Greg has talked about that a little bit, just how it has spread, how the later revelations open up missionary work in many, many more parts of the world. I guess just the history of the church is a history of expansion, enlarging Zion and her stakes and her tent, if you want to think about that metaphor, going from a Eastern U.S. church to a U.S. to an American to Western Hemisphere to everywhere. And we even have a stake center in Abu Dhabi. I love that. That's one of my favorite little facts about the church. Just that we really are coming forth, becoming stronger, spreading everywhere in the world, which is just amazing to be able to see happening before our eyes. The other thing that I thought about, this concept of obscurity can mean to be not well known. If something is obscure, then you've never heard of it. But the phrase doesn't stop there. It says the church will come forth out of obscurity and darkness. Not that the church itself is a dark entity, but it is obscured by darkness. I think that implies, too, that it will not only become better established and more prominent throughout the world, but that it will become better understood throughout the world. That's something that we can also see happening before our eyes. This last year, 2012, the quote-unquote Mormon moment during the election. I saw for myself that I actually do a daily roundup of news articles about the church for the organization Fair Mormon. There were days during that election cycle that I had 60, 70, close to 80 articles in that newsletter in a single day, which was hugely annoying from the point of view of my time putting that together, but was also really incredible to see. Not all of the coverage was positive, obviously, but it was asking the right questions. People before who didn't know anything about Mormons were now being able to pick up a copy of the New York Times or the Washington Post or their local newspaper and see just the basic facts about Mormons. When did the church start? Who started it? What's its structure? What are its people like, etc.? And so part of the obscurity that's being lifted is just people not knowing anything, not knowing any of the basic facts. And definitely knowing the basics is an important precursor to being able to believe in it and join the church. Now, the flip side of that is that there is also a lot of wrong information about the church and a lot of very negative and critical information about the church, which isn't always necessarily wrong, but can take something that is true and spin it and present it very negatively. And that happens, oh my goodness, all the time. We live in the internet era, like it or not. And there are a lot of voices out there that would like to paint a certain narrative about the church that is not conducive to faith and to even real understanding about our faith and about our leaders. So I think what we are still seeing is a process of coming out of obscurity, being able to correct those misconceptions We need to learn more about our own history. I think Craig would agree with that. He is, in fact, a historian and has written a lot of really wonderful stuff. There is so much information and research still to be done. There are a lot of articles yet to be written, and it's a really exciting thing. I hope that I expect everybody to be as big of a nerd as I am, but I would really hope that members in a lot of places would get a lot more interested in history, learning a lot of the little details and the personalities and the events and just everything, and not just early church history, you know, what we think of when we say church history, but there are, this process is unfolding all over the world, and there are historians and material being collected about the church in a lot of different countries, and it's really a delight to read. It's wonderful. Sometimes things will be surprising, and history is messy. The past is a really different place than sometimes we expect. But, you know, there are resources out there. There are good and careful historians who believe in the church and who are able to answer questions and to make things be more understandable. That's part of the interpreter's mission, is to help give information, not to obscure, but to bring into light, bring to everybody's attention the wonderful things that are still yet to be learned. So that's my thought about obscurity. Martin, is it okay if I go ahead into some of the more practical advice too? Is that
of course? Of course, that'd be cool.
All right. So another part of the discussion is the application. What do we do with all of this? We are really glad, and we believe the prophecies that the church is going to come out of obscurity and out of darkness. So what do we do? And I think, in at least the words that I've been in, there can be this feeling that, oh dear, they're talking about missionary work again, and kind of put on your shell because everybody feels a little bit guilty. And I get that. I'm the same way. I didn't serve a full-time mission. It kind of makes me a little sad that the age wasn't lowered to 19 a few years earlier. Maybe I would have gone. But just because I haven't served a full-time mission, and just because I don't have somebody, you know, all of my neighbors taking the discussions and close to baptism and just this missionary dynamo, it doesn't mean that there's not things that I can be doing and things that we all can be doing. I hope that this lesson doesn't induce a guilt trip in anybody, but rather just a feeling of, you know, there is just a little thing I can do, a few things here and there, and all the small things, great things come to pass. From my own history, I always try and keep this in mind, that someone very near and dear to me, I call him Dad, was a member of the church in his childhood and youth, but he was raised by one member parent and one non-member parent, and wasn't very active in the church as a teenager. What turned that around was that he had a good friend who was a member of the church, and he spent time in that friend's home. And I think it was a few conferences ago, Elder Ballard talked about having a gospel-sharing home, meaning just a home where the principles of the gospel are obvious and are loved and are lived, and it's not even the sort of thing that you have to come out and say, here's the Book of Mormon, but just it is what you are. It's, you know, hanging on your walls, and it's woven into your conversation, and it's part of your love for those around you. And so my father was often invited into a home just like that, and that's what made the difference for him. I consider those people who helped him to be every inch of missionaries, just as much as someone who goes off to the far corners of the world and teaches someone who had never ever heard of the church or even Jesus Christ before. Those people were missionaries too. The point of it all is to bring people to Christ, and, you know, it can be someone who is already a member and just needs a little extra boost. It can be someone who has never heard of the church, but the point is to really be someone who has taken upon you Christ's name, and to be willing to speak positively of the things that you know and the things that you love.
Fabulous. We've had some great comments here. I'd like to pick up on a couple of the thoughts that you have each made. The first one is, Craig, you mentioned the lowering of the missionary age, and I know from personal discussions with a few people who teach at some of the, I'll just leave it as places of higher education in northern Utah, that they have actually had to cut the number of classes offered in different departments because of how many LDS youth have left on missions.
And yeah, so, can I throw in something really quickly?
Please.
My youngest daughter is a student at Utah State University, and between her fall semester and the apartment for winter semester, when everyone was getting ready to go home for the Christmas holiday, four of her roommates in that six-woman apartment, four of them were packing up to leave because they were going on missions. So she had a whole turnover of new roommates other than her immediate roommate because of all of those young women going on missions. And I mean, that was repeated all over Utah. So that comment of yours, that is really true there.
Of course, everything will eventually adjust, but a huge impact and an amazing, hopefully, correlation in conversions will result as well. It's a wonderful thing. The second comment is, Craig, you talked about the impact of anti-Mormon material and critics at different points throughout the history of the church. I know sometimes members of the church look at articles, and Cassandra, you talked about 50, 60 articles in a day during Romney's bid for the presidency, and not all of those were positive, although certainly probably most of them were. But we shouldn't, as members, worry too much about this. And one of the more interesting reasons why is a study that was done not too many years ago by Matthew Roper, then at Farms and some others, found that there was a direct correlation between anti-Mormon literature and the conversion rate into the church. I guess the theory that all publicity is good publicity worked even back in the 1800s for today, because people see it and then have an interest in the church, and often they see that members of the church do not really act in the negative stereotypes that have been presented, or if they hear some negative doctrine, they want to find out if that's really true, and so they'll seek out an answer, and you have all kinds of people who have great missionary experiences explaining the true nature of the church. So not to fear if you see some negative article about the church. There have been thousands before, and there will be thousands more in the future. It's all right. A couple of quick thoughts about tips to actually...
But when you do see
it.
Such an article...
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I think there's a lag. I think there's a lag here. I just wanted to say, when you do see such an article that is negative toward the church, go ahead and write a letter to the editor or leave a comment on it. There's a whole organization called Mormon Voices that helps to steer people toward news about the church. So, sorry, I had to put in a plug for that. MormonVoices.org.
No, that's absolutely perfect. And if someone has a question about the church that they can't answer, to give a little plug for one of our highly esteemed but separate organizations, go to fairmormon.com and take a look at all of the hundreds and hundreds of responses to critics of the church from a faith-promoting perspective. It's a great source. MormonInterpreter.com has some great articles.
.org.
Were they .org? I thought it was .org.
FairMormon.org.
Well, thank you for that correction. I would have been sending them off to the wrong spot. FairMormon.org, and they'll have some great articles if you know anyone or if you yourself has a question about the church in connection with missionary work or otherwise that can't be answered. I wanted to wrap up my little portion here today with some tips about missionary work. I was invited a couple of years ago to talk about or to put together an approach that members of the church in the stake that I happen to be living in could use in connection with missionary work in people who haven't heard anything about the church at all and reactivation. And the approaches that I used were things that kind of make sense. Most people, when they want to do missionary work, come up with an approach along the lines of, I really need to do something. I know. And then they see their neighbor who's a non-member and go, gee, I like your new car. Can I send the missionaries over? Or, you know, something along the lines of, hi, I see you just moved in. Here, let me give you a Book of Mormon.
Oh, that doesn't work?
Well, it can, and the full-time missionaries tend to do things that are very direct and very blunt like that. But as members, something that will take away your level of anxiety in missionary work is to do it a bit more naturally. And the key way to do that is honestly have an interest in whoever you're going to talk to and simply ask questions. They will, if you're a good member of the church, see your example and know that you're a good person. They won't see horrible things going on at your home or in your life because of your example, although we all have problems from time to time. And if you ask them sincerely questions about their life, about who they are, about what interests them, missionary work will come naturally, especially if you're not afraid to just mention the church. Oh, I went to this meeting. It had this great theme, talked about some great moral precept or something that's of use in your life and just explain how it's been great. And you don't have to do much more than that. Ask questions and relate things that the church has taught or that you have recently experienced that have been useful and helpful in your life. Because when you get right down to it, the value of the gospel is how it helps us in our daily life. Of course, you know, the three of us love to get off into all the minutiae about all the, you know, historical and doctrinal and other matters, but when you get right to the substance and heart of the gospel, it's how it affects people in their ordinary life. And so if you use those simple concepts, ask questions, and explain how the gospel has aided in your life, missionary work becomes very simple. It becomes very easy. And the reason people often have high anxiety is because they're trying to force the issue or ask questions that don't seem natural. And if you have anxiety about it, maybe you shouldn't be asking questions like that soon or pushing something that you don't feel comfortable discussing that early, because missionary work really is something that should be natural and should be appropriate to share. So with those brief thoughts...
I just have one thing really quickly, and that is I know a lot of regular members are nervous about, well, what if they bring up something potentially difficult, dealing with church history or church doctrine, you know, without fail. There's a lot of misconceptions out there and obviously a lot of stereotypes. And people, including your neighbors, the people you work with or whatever else, most of them are very sincere. and they're really not trying to offend or embarrass or anything else. If they ask about polygamy, because that's a well-known stereotype with Mormons, and the best thing to do is to not get embarrassed or defensive, just kind of laugh it off or whatever. To give an example, if someone asks me about polygamy, I say, sure, my great-grandfather had 5 wives. And they go, oh my, oh wow. And after about 30 seconds to a minute of you're chuckling along with them being surprised, the conversation will move on to more important things, like what Martin brought out about, the wonderful benefits that the gospel brings into our lives and for our family, our families and everything. And so the best way to approach something that if someone asks a question that is difficult or embarrassing or whatever else, if it's a stereotype like polygamy, just laugh it off or say, yeah, you know, our ancestors practiced that, but we don't practice it anymore, or whatever else, and don't be concerned and don't be offended, because as I said, most people, they legitimately just don't know for sure. And once you answer a couple of difficult questions, or potentially difficult or embarrassing, it almost always goes around to more simple questions of, well, what do you believe? And then you can just kind of lay it out in a very simple way.
One additional comment along those lines. If you compare our church in some ways to another faith, the polygamy one comes up often. Oh, yes, polygamy was in our past, just like it's in the past in the Jewish faith and found in the Bible, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then it doesn't sound quite so weird and crazy and strange. And another thing that people can do is often they will not want to do missionary work because, as you said, Craig, they're afraid they're going to be asked a question that they don't know the answer to. There is no harm whatsoever in saying, I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. It hasn't really been my experience. I'm not a polygamist. I'll see if I can get more information. That's not something that happens in our church today. I don't have information on this weird, obscure subject that often comes up because somebody read some anti-Mormon book that has a crazy quote from some weird talk that was given, in 1863 or something that nobody knows about, but critics. Those are the kinds of things that tend to come up, things that most ordinary Latter-day Saints haven't had much experience with. And if some obscure thing like that comes up, just say, I'm not sure. I'll check into it. And then you can go on to fairmormon.org or Mormon Interpreter and get more information. Either one of you have anything else to add to our roundtable today? Cassandra, Craig?
Nope, it's been fun.
We are all good. All right, we thank you for joining us today, and I hope you will join us on other roundtable broadcasts from the Interpreter Foundation. Joining me today has been Cassandra Hedelius on the bottom left of your screen and Craig Foster in the center. My name's Martin Tanner. We thank you for joining us today and invite you to more broadcasts in the future.